Comrades, you are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning Comrade. You can check it out every Tuesday at 8 o'clock on this station or on WHIVFM.org/listen. I'll get more information, goodmorningcomrade.com. Today on the show, we have Robert, and we And we also have a very special guest, the host of Sup Last, Cyrus Cooper. What's going on, man?
Hey, Jeffrey. Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hello. Whoa.
I appreciate it. It's going to be it's a fun day, fun night. I see, I don't know that the radio audience can't see the beautiful background that you got there, but I really like the Marguerite Green sign there.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the, most inspiring kind of campaigns I'd ever sort of seen happen in this state of Louisiana. And I respect the hell out of Margie and everybody who did anything for that, because she was doing the best that she could to kind of actually engage in something that's, first off, nobody really thinks about, like the food and stuff. I mean, we had her on the show, actually. And we talked to her, and, it was one of the cool things that happened that we saw kind of going forward. And she got 250,000 votes, which is crazy, you know?
Yeah, man. Because she's a very talented person.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it was an inspiring campaign. But it just always is good to see stuff. I have one of those signs up in my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of, it was just it was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Reason I brought it up, I don't know. I'd known Margie for a long time, so I'm just excited.
I've only known her for like a year or so, but yeah, she's definitely like somebody who's like an extremely impressive person, and she knows what she's doing. And she's a teacher too, so like I respect the hell out of teachers, because you know I am one. So
yeah, flex on them. Don't let them forget.
I'm not gonna never ever.
Man, that's a very very hard job. Mm-hmm. Being a teacher, from everybody's, you're talking to you about it, hearing mm-hmm. from her about it, anybody I can hear about it, for the teaching profession, it mm-hmm. seems like there's a lot of people trying to tear down regular schools all the time.
Yeah, and right now is like an opportunity to tear them down extra, and maybe we could start talking about that first. There was actually a report. I saw this in the newspaper. You know, the newspaper that you click on your computer, that one.
I love the news clicker.
Yeah, the news. But it was saying that Betsy DeVos was basically saying that she would use the coronavirus sort of like, you know, chaos that we're all existing and suffering through right now to try and like push through the charter school education reforms and the vouchers and all the bad stuff that she's been doing already before. You know, and she sort of like said it straight up, which was pretty, I mean, I guess you got to respect it in the sense of she's not trying to hide anything, I guess, but I mean, it is, she's not trying to hide that she's an open threat to teachers and stuff.
It's such a straight, like a weird thing where we like have to respect it when they're not duplicitous.
Yeah.
For so long, it's just been a complete duplicity.
Yeah. It's like that drill tweet. Lies. It's like that drill tweet when he said, well, you absolutely do not have to hand it to the Iowa State, you know?
Oh man. And then it's just like, yeah, it's clearly, I mean, in New Orleans, we, you know, it's always a blueprint for whatever they want to do whenever something bad happens. Mm-hmm. And so I think like, yeah, I mean, it's just beset on all sides with mm-hmm. privatization. And it feels like this is when everybody's, you have all the classes nebulized already back to their houses. And it seems like the perfect time to strike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be bad when everybody gets like, I don't know. It feels like Microsoft's probably just going to make like one big classroom for everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
have everybody
don't say that.
Just
don't say Microsoft.
Education is just going to become the Khan Academy now.
That's like the meme, isn't it? That mm-hmm. Microsoft is responsible for the coronavirus, and that's why you shouldn't wear a mask and get old people sick.
I think Bill Gates did it or something himself. I think it might be outside of Microsoft. Because they don't want to blame the Xbox. They just think that the Bill Gates and the foundation is responsible.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah. They're using like legal. They're using like legal like workarounds to sort of like get themselves off the hook. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. And then not to mention all the stuff, like there's already all the Left Behind series and stuff that's already about like pandemics and Mark of the Beasts and stuff. And so now they think that like you're getting the vaccine is going to be like some sort of Mark of Cain. So everything about this virus, of course, it's otherworldly. So it's been transmuted into an otherworldly kind of phenomenon within the public. But it's just very scary to see. People just like every response under the sun is happening to this virus, and it's
none of them for people though. Like none of them is for actually people. All of them is just to kind of like try and make stuff go. Like the objective seems to be try and get stuff back to normal. And if it takes 100 million lives or more, which is already crossed 100,000, then so be it. You know, it's like the only thing that's important is that things just go back to normal.
I mean, yeah,
that's the thing, for the listeners, like for people have had to heard me say it a million times by now, where people have all these conspiracy theories about, you know, COVID-19 and China this and Obama that and Bill Gates this, but they're perfectly okay sacrificing human beings so Golden Calf in New York. And it just, with no irony, that's what's the most terrifying to me and blows my mind. No irony at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that part is threatening, and it does make me upset. But I mean, the ruling class has always operated with this sort of bloodthirst. What is the wrinkle that's like getting to me is that people are crowing for the opportunity to die, that the fascism has like gotten into the people who support them so much that they're like, yeah, exactly. I should be the person who lays down their lungs to make that line go up. And that's the kind of stuff that makes me really nervous. And then also, not only that, is like the way that happens in so many people, you have like the religious angle where some people feel like they like that this is some sort of right from God to like make people. And now like once people are cured, you know, or like I was sick and I was healed from the virus. So now I'm like anointed in this purity.
God has chosen me.
Yeah. God's chosen me to be like one of the people that can open up the bowling alley or something.
I need to get my hair done.
Yeah. So thankfully, and then there's that. And then there's just like the normal, like the cure can't be worse than the disease. The economy is flatlining. And then all the arguments and sophistry that people use. Mm-hmm. In that sort of vein, when things start to disassemble and see just like totally 100% that they're just like just saying anything to make what they want occur, that there's some sort of, like they act like there's some sort of magic password. Like, did you know that mental illness and domestic violence are a problem in the country?
Whoa.
Like, that's like, whoa, dude. No, for real?
Well, when it comes to school stuff, too, like, nobody at all ever before coronavirus cared that, like, one of the big things that schools provide to kids is like lunches and stuff. But now when you're trying to like have everything not closed down and like they're pissed off because they're, you know, they have to be at home with their kids that they hate, they're like, oh man, these kids need to go to school. Otherwise they're never going to eat. You know,
like, they got to get these lunches.
Yeah. It's about school. Yeah. This is important. I really care about the kids.
Man, and yeah, just like, yeah, you know, people are just tired, and that's understandable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get that. There's like, you know, it's a fatigue to like being inside all the time. But if we lived in like a real society, there would be things to like help with that feeling, right?
If you cared about people at all.
Yeah, exactly. There would be like, you know, the types of programs that like Bernie Sanders is trying to like up the payments to people, basically to keep, you know, stay home. And, you know, just like have some money to like, you know, stock away and buy groceries when you go out with a mask and stay at home as much as you can.
Right.
But instead, it's like there can't be any one coordinated response. It's nothing but chaos.
Yeah.
And then
free markets gotta solve this. Otherwise, it's
exactly.
Otherwise, it's tyranny.
This, and it's such a strange. It is. It's the free market of like anything. The free market of explanations. It's the free market of. It's not just like the economy demands that we go back to work, which it does, of course, because, you know, what the fuck? When has ever a stockbroker had like a real job? So it's like anything kind of like gets after them, mm-hmm. then, you know, they start to feel it and they're like, well, I guess it's time for me to do my job again, which is bark at people to work.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I've ever had to do is like scream at somebody on the phone. Like it's a bunch of Karens, like either the dudes or you know, gender doesn't matter. Karens just exist in a transcendent
Karens
gender.
And Darens, dude.
Yeah, Karens and Darens. Exactly, that's what it is. And I don't know.
I have a theory on that too, though.
Karen theory? Is this like a unified theory of Karen?
The whole idea of people ready to die for capitalism and like some kind of internet tough guy or some kind of hero because they don't want to wear a mask.
Mm-hmm. They think they're fucking Clint Eastwood or something like that in a Western movie,
yeah.
You know?
And I mean, like, obviously not the whole human race, obviously not the majority of people in the world, but the people who are being loudest in the situation, to where there's no like crucible, there's no in the past, like human beings had to run from the lion to like prove that you belong in society, or you had to hunt your own food and gather your own vegetables or whatever. But everything in our lives now are just handed to us. So people have to come up with all this kind of, I don't want to say distraction, but they have to come up with these kind of like tests to prove that they're like, oh, look at me, like I'm a badass. And this isn't just coronavirus. This is just like not wearing a mask in public is just the recent piece of it.
So to tie that back to what you were talking about, we were talking about with Matt about like the sort of like symbolic politics that we sort of see constantly sort of like held up, sort of like the I am doing the signifier of the thing that shows virtue, right? And those things happen on the right wing a lot. You know, like a lot of the people that are running around saying, I want my guns, I want my, you know, whatever. And that thing, that these symbolic politics that we talk about, they like not wearing a mask has become a symbol, right, of rebellion, like they're Batman or something, you know. And the thing with that is that Batman symbol that they're putting out there is actually got material consequences, that you can actually very more easily get the disease than give it to somebody else, more than anything, because the masks, more than anything, I mean, I don't know. Or give it to one another.
I like that theory about things being like about there being a test and stuff. I mean, I'm not like the biggest like evolutionary psychology kind of guy, because mm-hmm. a lot of people use that for a lot of crummy reasons sometimes. But I think that there's something. I mean, there's definitely something to the narrative in your life of struggle too, right? Mm-hmm. That there's like every person who is trying to like write their story has to have these obstacles they overcome, whether they're real or imaginary or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so like there is a lot of, like you said, like a type its own specific kind of virtue signaling on the right in terms of wearing masks versus not wearing masks. Mm-hmm. But all of those, I mean, it's like, it's so divorced from, like you said, from reality. It's mm-hmm. not even, there's no connection between what it like the concrete and the what is symbolized, right? I mean, it's like you could write, like I think that people would be a lot happier in the world if they wrote like I love Donald Trump and want to kiss him on the mouth and wore a mask, and it's like literally was their politics all over their mm-hmm. face. That symbol directly about their politics would be much more, you know, mm-hmm. acceptable in society right now. And as a person who disagrees with their political symbology, it's not what is gone from that, though, is the attack of it.
Well,
right? I think what the draw is of not wearing a mask is not just interiorly, right? I'm not weak, so I won't wear a mask. I think it is the exterior I don't give a hell a damn, about yeah. you. I don't care about you at all. And so I will do what as I please because I'm an individual here. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot more of it is pushed in that sort of external kind of attacking way, because that's that sort of that same impulse of like, I'm a fighter for Trump, right? Mm-hmm. That like, you can't go out there and be past Trump, right? You have mm-hmm. to be out there active for Trump. And yeah. that's fascism incarnate, right? Is activity. Mm-hmm. It's not passivity. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you are listening to WHIV-LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is Good Morning Comrade. We have Jeff, Robert, and Cyrus Cooper, host of Sup Last. So I guess on that point, I want to sort of drill down on the specifically, like you said that they could wear, you know, whatever their political messaging is on their mask, or but I guess the point of what they're trying to do is saying they're rejecting the paradigm entirely, right? Those right. bounds that have sort of been laid out by like actual people who understand the actual reality of actual pandemics is completely like, shut up, nerd, you get a wedgie because, you know, I'm such a badass. And it's sort of yeah. like, you know, you get out of here, I'm doing what I want. I don't care what happens to anybody else. That's like the ultimate in sort of like libertarian thinking, in the sense that like they won't, they're actually doing something. And I don't want to like, I definitely am, to a certain extent, like, dime store psychologizing here, but, like, there is a sort of idea, because I feel it, you know, like wearing a mask sucks, you know, I don't ever want to do it either, and if I could get away with, like, if I could do that and not hurt someone else, 100% I would, but, like, it's just so much, you know, that didn't, and I think that there is sort of, like, a certain component of, like, not caring if you hurt anyone else. Or it's either an ignorance or a malice, and functionally it becomes not a difference. You know,
I honestly really truly believe it is a malice and not mm-hmm. an ignorance, right? Whenever people, it's not that they haven't heard of the coronavirus mm-hmm. or anything like that. Right? It's that they've heard what has been told to them, quote unquote, by the news, and they've rejected it. They've made mm-hmm. that active. They've said that I think yeah. that is not true.
They want to shove Anthony Fauci into a locker, you know?
Right. Yes. And they've totally, and it's one of these same sort of consequences to this idea of like not having any baseline facts anymore. Mm-hmm. That like there's
facts are debatable.
There's nothing that tethers people to reality outside of the one created them for themselves, and this is mm-hmm. beyond now like people's Facebook bubbles or something like that, mm-hmm. right? This is where they've like tuned themselves so much mm-hmm. and have decided like, and it's happened over the last 4 years where people have tuned themselves so much into the wants and needs of Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm. Of the Republican ideology. Mm-hmm. They've just totally given themselves over to it at this point, right? Mm-hmm. It is a religion at this point, which is like, you know, like just like the people who want to, you know, who scream about like how they don't believe the rape allegations about Joe Biden. There's just a certain religiosity yeah, to those.
It's just Catholics and Protestants. yeah, red team, blue certain, team, you know?
Yeah. And we've gone beyond a fact-based sort of rational debate about what the best policies are and all. And I know when people say facts, logic, reason, that kind of stuff, it all becomes baseline for sophistry and lies and all kinds of right-wing talking points. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I mean, like for me, I look at numbers and mm-hmm. I see like a socialist program in the United States would redound the most benefits to the most people. Like that's that's me using logic and reason, look and evidence. It's mm-hmm. not just feelings, and I think that both are important, and that morals certainly guide my political ideology. But I think there's all kinds of concrete ways you can say to people too that this would make the, you know, that's why the Medicare for All argument was so supported by people saying it was cheaper. It doesn't mm-hmm. shouldn't matter that it's cheaper at all because it's better and right. But it does these things. It is cheaper, so that is better for some people. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are that now that there's like, you can't even talk to anybody. And I'm not, I know I'm not the first person to do this, but like anytime you start to even walk down the path of trying to have a conversation about ideas, and when those ideas are even, when the challenge is broached, it becomes a forceful response right back at you.
Yeah.
So the challenge is that coronavirus is real and Donald Trump might be wrong. The forceful response is Donald Trump is not wrong. I will not wear a mask at this Walgreens. And if you try to make me, I will cough in your face.
Right. Exactly.
And it just becomes like mutated like this. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this has just become the first opportunity I've gotten in the middle of this pandemic to like just talk extemporaneously.
Let it fly. Let it fly. I love hearing it, because I think what you're saying is really interesting. But I do have an interest. Like, I have a question, though, because I agree that facts matter. And like, I don't know. I don't mean this in a weird way, but like, you kind of said facts don't care about your feelings, and I like Ben Shapiro says that kind of stuff too. Now,
right? Like I said, it does. Like I said, whenever I say, like, you get into these ideas of facts and logic,
yeah,
it's easily sort of pulled and torn apart with, you know, by people not using either facts or logic to try to pretend that they are. And I mean, I understand. I have the same sort of itchy kind of feeling when I hear people who say, like, well, facts don't care about your feelings.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think that facts exist, and I also think feelings exist.
Yeah.
And I don't think that
both of them matter,
facts,
by the way.
Can care. You know, facts don't have, that's a fact that I know, is facts have no ability to care about anything,
right?
Because they are just a definition of a truth. So it's like, there are feelings, and they can lead you to what you feel like you should look into, or what you know, but there are also, you know, I think you should try to, like, you know, look at contrary sources sometimes to the things that you believe, right? You shouldn't always consume media that 100% props you up, or else you're gonna go soft.
And a critical question sort of comes up when that sort of gets begged, when, you know, not when necessarily, well, I guess maybe to be maybe a little bit provocative, but like definitely when Ben Shapiro says it, when he says facts don't care about your feelings, the question that comes to me is, what are facts then? Like, what is the facts that you're presenting here? Because you can frame a fact any kind of way you want, and it can mean whatever you're trying to show it to mean. And that's kind of the thing where I'm noticing, specifically with coronavirus, but it comes with every other thing in the world, with this entire sort of like intellectual dark web, nerds who have kind of fallen off recently. But they would always kind of have this idea where they would present facts that were questionable, but they were presented as facts. And the idea that, like, well, they're facts kind of does all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, I would see where you're coming from there. I mean, they like to...
And I'm not saying that's what you're doing necessarily, right?
Yeah. They'll cherry pick a source, and they'll grab a misleading headline.
I got think tanks. And, like, I got so many think tanks that just make stuff up.
Right. And that's the other thing, is that, like, economics is not a fact.
Right.
I mean, it's like, anytime you want it, like, anytime anybody says, like, this is what an economics textbook says, so that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, economics is like, you know, it's astronomy for bald dudes. It's like, just like people guessing most of the time. There's theories about every single which way. And so that's the main thing that they do, is they don't, you know, they cherry pick facts. They frame them however they want. They've had a lot of experience walking over, you know, people who haven't had as much practice at just spewing nonsense at people that they have.
Oh, they do own videos of, like, undergrads at a college, you know? They go to a college and they have, like, some kid who's mad because Ben Shapiro said some, you know, racist stuff about Palestinians, which he absolutely, definitely said some absolutely horrible stuff. People get mad about it for very good reason, but they don't necessarily have the kind of, like, rhetorical practice or whatever that he has. So they come up and they say, screw you, Ben Shapiro. And then he kind of just clowns on him. He has any sort of like edits his YouTube video. It's like, you know, Ben Shapiro owns SJW. You know, that's what it becomes.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, yeah, there's all kinds of people out there who do the same, who do that same shtick. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, it's like, hey, it's for them. You mm-hmm. know, it's like he doesn't want to change anybody's mind. He's not trying to, you know, it's not like he's trying to share facts to people on the left mm-hmm. so that they can, you know, wow, maybe, you know, maybe it is true that, you know, his horrendous worldview might have some merit to it.
No, like, but he definitely is trying to get people who click on to own videos for sure. Like if you want to see somebody get owned, you know, that, then like normal people will be like, oh yeah, sure, I'll click that. You know, if they're not political, and that could be the start of that trajectory, I suppose.
I mean, anybody who, I think he's a laughing stock on his face, and that's why totally. I don't want to like, I never ever want to like. There's so many people out there who want to like. It was like if I was in the room with them,
I can't
wait to like shred them apart.
Bullshit.
That's just like tilting at windmills. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like if you got in the room with him, he might make you look like a dummy, even though he's a dummy because he's good at his one thing, which is never stop talking lies. So it's like if you're in a room with a guy who's just like spewing lies like over and over again, and he's got like 25 seconds of talking and he's told like 45 lies.
Yeah.
You're going to like go in there and you're going to be able to like take apart every single one of those lies.
Yeah.
He's a dissembling maniac loser, and trying to debate him is a fool's errand.
Yeah. And the key thing too for me is that like if he's going to be the one that's presenting this and like he's presenting the video, he can frame it as if you're like start like doing facts at him or whatever, then you're a nerd and he's crushing you. If you start getting like start like hot with him and start like blowing up at him, well, this person's losing their mind, you know, and they can basically like set that table. And
there's so many ways it could go too. I mean, if you cited a fact, right? What's the citation for that fact? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he's never had to cite a fact during the whole time he's been talking.
Mm-hmm.
He's never pulled a paper citation. If you asked him what journal it came from, he's like, well, just stutter and go, you know, and try to dissemble and lie and stall for time. But whenever you try to bring a fact, he does the same thing. What's the citation for that? Did you read the whole study?
He's just like draws you down in this pedantry. And I guess the thing that I guess connects what we were talking about at the beginning and this is that I kind of think that a lot of the, you know, I'm not wearing a mask, and the Ben Shapiro thing specifically is that both of those, the core of what they're doing is to trigger the libs, if you know what I mean, or to like sort of get a reaction from people.
Yes. Like I said, it's all active, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing passive. It's not just to like sit in the cut and be like checkmate libs like they used to like in 2014 or whatever. Now it's it's 2020 and you know they're getting a little more active about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very, very, I mean, it's like they're at risk. They are at risk, and I mean your heart goes out to them for like believing this stuff because they're. Because that's the other part about it that is so tragic, you know, is that the people who are gullible to that kind of stuff, you know, they fall for it.
They're being used.
Yeah. And all he wants is more money. You know, I mean, I don't think Ben Shapiro has, a care in his body about what happens to the majority of the people who listen to his program.
No.
You know what I mean? I don't think that he actually gives a lick. All he cares about is the metrics on the Ben Shapiro show, the downloads and the sales for mugs of liberal tears or whatever. And like I said, it's all this, like, if I have somehow successfully said something you disagree with, then my point has been proved.
Yeah.
It's just like not, I mean, for people who say they, you know, and this has been pointed out a million times, for people who say they like logic, facts, reason, they certainly, they know, have no, you know, loyalty to them when it serves them. That's for sure.
Yeah, and again, the two key things that kind of come up is the fight for, like, defining what is a fact. Because that's an initiative that you kind of have if you can define that on the front end. And then the presentation of whatever it is that you're trying to do. So if it's a Ben Shapiro video, Ben Shapiro or, you know, Jordan Peterson or whoever is not going to put out a video that makes them look dumb or stupid or bad. They're not going to, like, Ben Shapiro is not going to put a Ben Shapiro gets owned by SJW video, you know?
No. I mean, yeah, there's... It's like, you know, the WWE isn't going to show you, like, the house show where, like, the somebody got messed up and something broke, you know. He has the means of production on that, and he's going to control the content for sure.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's just, you know, what it is. He's got like a slickly produced talk show. He sits up there, chats all day long and just says the same stuff about everybody, you know, the same stuff that Steven Crowder says, the same stuff that Dave Rubin says.
Yeah, he had a machine.
It's just one big, you know, conveyor belt recycling factory where they all just have the same takes. All usually boil down to, you know, people are trying to make things fair for other people. Isn't that unfair for you? Which is like the most absurd thing.
They're trying to turn the internet into AM talk radio. Is what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it like, let me pause for station ID and then we can continue this. You're listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. The show is Good Morning Comrade. We have Jeff and Cyrus Cooper on the show, host of Sup Last. You should check out Cyrus on Twitch. He is very funny. He's been doing a lot of commentary on the news. Get more information at Cyrus J. Cooper on Twitch. Is that what it is?
Yep.
You can see his stuff. You're welcome to do so. But we were just talking about I didn't expect to get go down this trajectory, but I'm glad that we did. We're kind of talking about how Ben Shapiro and a lot of these, and he's sort of become the sort of steel man for this whole conversation, but he's been the guy, he's essentially one of the, like, bleeding edge, I guess you could say, of the sort of turning the internet, or at least sectors of the internet, into, like, 90s right-wing talk radio. And do you ever listen to right-wing talk radio back in the day?
Yes. I mean, 2006 to 2009 or so, right around then, I almost exclusively listened to right-wing talk radio just to get, like, irritated all the time.
Oh, my God. They're so mad. It's so unpleasant. Yeah.
They are so mad. And that was when it was also in the glory days of some of the best, most unhinged right wing.
The Michael Savages of the world.
Oh, I used to love Michael Savage because he was just so out there.
He banned Britain, baby.
He's like, the show would start with Megadeth, and then he's like, I'm a 67 year old man. Or whatever. You're like, God darn. But I would listen to that and Rush, and, you know, it was all the Jeremiah Wright stuff was coming out there.
Oh, my God. They were so hard on that, the Jeremiah Wright stuff. That was just like red meat, like for sharks, you know, blood in the water.
Oh, man. They hated that guy. And a lot of Bill Ayers talk back then, too. I love the Bill Ayers stuff. A lot of Weather Underground.
Stuff from literally from the 1960s. They're like, well, the Weather Underground's coming back.
So was it... Who was it? Saul Alinsky? It was like all a bunch of Saul Alinsky books. They all wanted to talk about... That was the year of Operation Chaos, whenever... Yeah. Limbaugh tried to get people to go vote for Hillary Clinton to open Democratic primaries.
That's like something from South Park. Like, you know what I mean?
That happened, man.
Yeah.
And don't let people try to memory hole the time that Rush Limbaugh told everybody to vote for Hillary Clinton.
We need to find that sound clip. That would be great if we could find that sound clip. But they do some like wild stuff, and they always have just sort of like screaming anything just to kind of like get their people fired up and get the and this is what they're good at, right? This is why it works, is because they are absolute masters at pressing the buttons on their own people of the discontent that people harbor. And they're also, for people who are just sort of like actually care about other people, they're good at making them mad. You know, that's the two things that you have to do to be a right-wing radio person.
It's, I mean, it was so strange too, the way, like, because you could just flip the formulation of facts don't care about your feelings, mm-hmm. which is like feelings don't need facts.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
the dialectic
that's what
right there.
On right wing talk radio all the time. It's just like feeling, 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 mm-hmm. feeling. It's all feeling all the time, pumped into you constantly.
And if you get mad about it, you're a snowflake.
Yeah. And it's like,
these are the biggest snowflakes there ever been in the world.
It's literally all they do is exist to irritate themselves about things they imagine people are doing. It's like, that's what the QAnon thing. People are, you know, is the same deal. It's just people like in their mind, imagining what people are doing to them. And they're just like getting ticked off about it. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a real thing that, oh, of course I would say that on the radio. But but it's, you know, it's not a real thing. And
what do you think about the pizza, the Galaxy Pizza and pinball?
Oh,
what do you think really happened?
Man, that is so, it's just so crazy. I would think it's like, hey, it seems like a pretty cool place. Honestly,
yeah, I love pinball and I love pizza.
I do too. And you know what? I love DIY venues. It seemed mm-hmm. like they had a lot of like cheap punk shows there and stuff. And that's, and some of the flyers were, you know, what people glommed onto for some mm-hmm. of the QAnon stuff, with some like punk flyers that are happening at the Comet Ping Pong. So yeah, dude, it seemed like a tight place to be. Eat some pizza, watch some punk, don't go downstairs and just live your life, you know? But it's like, yeah, with all these, the conspiracy angle on everything. I mean, this was at the same time too. I like right in the mornings was when they had Glenn Beck too. Mm-hmm. And Glenn Beck was like the king of the conspiracy
stuff. Oh my
God.
He was like the chalkboard with all of the lines that are going to all of the places. Oh
yes.
My gosh.
He had like, that was, and before he got the TV show, mm-hmm. he was like blowing up and getting syndicated with his morning show.
Yeah.
And
Shock jock. Dude is just a shock jock.
Yeah.
That's all he ever is.
Absolutely. And like, I remember one of the times, like I used to listen to him in the morning all the time when I was driving to the dock, because it was like, you know, there's not other time to talk radio and I'm not trying to like listen to music yet. And like, well, sometimes when I tune in, he's like doing that Don Imus thing where it's like, sometimes it's not even political. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he was just like talking to like his producer, his like co-host guy, about like some time he like went to like Back to the Future. And I was like, okay, this is fine. This is like
amazing.
And then like a couple weeks later, he's like Van Jones and Acorn and like all kinds of craziness.
Oh my God, the Acorn thing. Oh, do you remember the Acorn thing when it went down? Because that was a little bit after my, like that was a little bit before my time, like when I started like actually paying attention to left media. But man, when going back and looking at the Acorn stuff, it just so bananas. Can you actually just like lay out what Acorn was and what happened?
I mean Acorn, it seemed to be a community organizing group that was about it was like, it helped with housing and like low, and stuff like that. And so there was, you know, James O'Keefe, the Project Veritas goon, dressed up in an oversized pimp hat and walked in there and like tried to pretend like he was like trying to use Acorn services to set up some sort of, you know, I don't know, sex work brothel thing. And he was like, and he was clearly like edited the videos like mm-hmm. very, you know, a shady fashion, and like people who worked in offices, and a guy dressed up as a cartoon pimp like came in there to try to talk to him, like said like whatever they could to like get him the heck out of there. And then he like, they said you're not arrested, so they love this or whatever. But it ended up going like becoming so big that like a person got like forced out of the federal government, the Obama administration, because of the like Acorn scandal, because she like worked for Acorn at one point.
And Acorn took federal funds, and that was what the scandal was, because that was like the idea is that they were saying that the federal government is funding like prostitution rings or something like that. It was complete, complete BS.
Just absolutely garbage and enforced, you know, I can't recall the woman's name out, but of course, it was, you know, a woman gets fired. And, you know, they like, it was all a big nasty thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just,
it was the biggest thing in like 2007. It was like the biggest thing in like 2007, 2008, 2009.
Yeah. And it was, and it's just like the beginning of it, right? Yeah. That like James O'Keefe is still around, and it's just like, let's come up with a salacious fake story.
Yeah.
And we'll hammer on it until it gives us results, because if we hammer on it enough, then people must think it's real.
Yeah.
And if people must think it's real, then that means there must be some sort of response to it. So if we're able to like drum up a completely fake thing to the point to where somebody has to respond to it,
mm-hmm.
then they've won. It's
That's all that matters. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you respond to something like that, then your response, no matter what it is, or even if you ignore it, like if you're basically coming with that crap, no matter what it is that you do or say, confirms what they're saying that you've done.
Yeah, exactly. And you end up in the same trap like you did when you try to like debate Ben Shapiro, because
mm-hmm.
that's not what they're in for. It's not what they're here for.
I guess I do say that debating Ben Shapiro and not debating Ben Shapiro does kind of do the same thing. Because like he can like if he's like calling somebody individually out for a debate, he's gonna say, well, they're ducking me, so they're cowards or whatever, you know. And but like I guess the only way that only reason that anyone would ever engage with a debate with Ben Shapiro is that they would make him look bad. And by the way, if Ben Shapiro wants to debate me, I will wreck him.
Look, if he wants to come on the stream, he can come on the stream anytime.
I'm
happy to have him on the stream. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a couple of people watch me, you know, not a large platform, not really worried about him like being able to speak to too many people there. And then if he wants to talk to me about it, you know, I'd be glad to talk to him, but you know.
Why is Ben Shapiro ducking us? Why is he ducking us?
He's ducking us. He doesn't want to talk to me about Civ 5.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Damn, you're on Civ 5 still? You got to get on Civ 6.
Man, I downloaded Civ 5 a couple of like 2 weeks ago for the mm-hmm. first time. I never had it. And
great
then
game.
This whole
great
like
game.
Epic game store thing mm-hmm. where they're giving away Civ 6 for like a week right now for free.
That one's good too. It's different, it's way harder, but yeah, go for it.
I downloaded it. I added it to my library or whatever, mm-hmm. the Epic Game Store, so whenever I'm done I can go and play it. But man, mm-hmm. I've been just cranking it out of Suleiman the Magnificent on Civ 5, and I've been having fun with that. So if he wants to come, if he's got any sort of, if he wants to call me a hypocrite for having like a stock market in my Civ 5 game or something.
Oh, look at you. Look at you doing the thing that you're saying is bad. Look at you. You just built Wall Street. Gotcha.
Cyrus, looks like a little bit of hypocrisy is coming from you.
Interesting that your name is Cyrus, isn't it?
It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Kind of funny.
You know, let me pause real quick for station ID, and I do want to roll back to conspiracy theories, but you're listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning Comrade. You can get more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. We have Cyrus Cooper on the show. He is the host of Sup Last, which is on, you can get information about that on twitch.tv/CyrusJCooper. Is that correct?
That's right. Late night.
Late
news
night.
Show.
Yeah. If you want to watch some news, he's a good person that he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening in America.
I tried.
And the world. So anyway, rolling back to conspiracy theories, and this is something that is not like a breaking, a cutting, it's not a bleeding edge of like a critique or whatever, but, and I think Brace and Liz over at TruAnon, which you get more information at that podcast, but they have actually done a really great job of kind of taking back the initiative of sort of at least thinking about conspiracy theories and not taking it away directly, but at least engaged with it from the left, in a way that is, I mean, look, Whether or not conspiracies happen, like, conspiracy theories exist, right? And the way that the right wing sort of, like, frames conspiracy theories for the most part is that, well, there's nothing that you can do about it, and you might as well just become, like, black pill and sort of, like...
Yeah, I mean, or they're just, they say it's a different person with the conspiracy. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
or
like
it becomes the Jews or whatever, you know?
Right. Or the QAnon or social liberals or cultural Marxism or whatever it is. There's like,
it's a theater and a struggle. It's a theater and a struggle that we need to engage with.
And look, I love conspiracy theories too, quote unquote, because I do, I mean, I honestly believe that, like, there's a small amount of people in power in our country. I don't think, I mean, it's not like outside the realm of complete, you know, of the rational thought, because our Congress is what, 500 people?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a ton of people. You know, there's like what, a hand, wealthy people, 1,000 billionaires or whatever in the country or whatever. To think that they can't like be in contact with one another a little bit or have some sort of an overarching feeling about how things should go. And then things going that way because they have the most influence doesn't really seem like to me much of, you know, it's not like a conspiracy that is false, right? It seems to be like one of those, it's not like one of these ideas that takes a lot of leaps of logic, right?
Right.
Most conspiracy theories on the right, you have to take like humongous leaps, like, you know, for like somehow, some way, George Soros.
Yeah, right.
I mean, which also, you know, means that they understand that people with more money have an outsized influence on thought in the world. You know what I mean? So their thought of George Soros as a boogeyman. But, and then they say, oh, it's just conspiracy theory stuff whenever you think about the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's like,
why do you worry about George Soros, who's infinitely, like, and again, like, I'm not defending George Soros, but, like, why would you worry about him and not worry about the Koch brothers?
If you're worried about influence, right, big money influence over politics, if you think that that's the problem, then yeah, both of them should be criticized. You know what I mean? But that's not the problem. It's the bent. It's who he supports versus the Koch brothers. That's why the Koch brothers never really even come up in conversation with them. The Koch brothers aren't part of QAnon somehow, even though if I had to think about, like, if there was somebody who was trying to, like, some sort of deep state thing, I mean, he'd probably be a person who would operate in it if that was the case.
Yeah, the deep state's but just the state.
The idea that, like, I definitely think that what needs to happen is the demarginalization of the idea of what a conspiracy theory is,
yeah.
Right? That, like, anything that can be considered fringe, you can just say, like, well, that's not real, and that's, you can just cast it aside. But there are things that are currently unexplained in the world. There are strange connections to people. Not to say that there's an architecture or a plan behind any of those things, but the fact that the world is so small and these people are friends with one another, even if they didn't help one another or anything, didn't do anything materially to support each other, the fact that these people all are in the know and travel in the same circles should at least be enough of its own pause to kind of think, what, like, if I'm worried about people's ideological bubbles and not, and having, you know, trying to get out of consuming the same media, what are these people doing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these people are literally just calling up the think tanks that are going to confirm to them what they want to hear. They're talking to other rich people who feel exactly the same about things that they do. And then that, to me, it's like, that's just the absolute lowest level of what's possibly going on.
And
then
to
you can,
a point,
like, start throwing on a bunch of, like, other plans and people being freaky with one another and, like, a bunch of different, you know, temples and stuff. And all that stuff is also,
whether,
you know,
or not they're doing it, who cares?
About. Yeah, but the big picture is that the world of wealth and influence is small, and they keep regular people out of it most of the time. And conspiracy theories are just one little window at trying to see a part of that whole. They, like, you, as, like, regular people here, I feel like sometimes we, you know, we don't get to see the whole architecture that the billionaire class is doing, but conspiracy theories are little glimpses into the windows where we got to see where they slipped up on hiding them. Oh, yes.
So
the third eye to me.
So one of the things that and this actually does make sense to me in a very distinct way. I don't know. Since you just said that essentially that they have these very small networks of very powerful people that exist in the world. If I was in that position and I can sort of like organize that wealth and power to essentially ensconce myself in a permanent position so that that situation either gets permanently the same or gets better for me, why wouldn't you do that? You know what I mean? So they're like if you just get into their brain for 1 minute and you think, well, wow, Bill Gates is spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on education. Education has not gotten any more democratic or any better. He's spending hundreds of millions of dollars on polio, and that situation might have changed, but he's definitely gained a ton of influence in the sort of like nonprofit NGO world. Like, why would you then not conclude that that person is buying influence? That goes back to time immemorial. That goes back to like ancient Rome. That goes to ancient Rome, where you get like, you know, the theater of Pompeius Maximus, you know where they sort of like build and sponsor these public buildings, right? Why wouldn't like they're doing that to make sure that the society recognizes that they're important. And if anybody like goes against that, then the society can be like, well, why are you against the people that built this society?
Yeah, I mean, there's like, and there's so many stratifications of that, like all the way from he's a job creator to like throwing away, you know, like any sort of critique of power being unduly influenced.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
It's just like that's the conspiracy. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, that's what it is. The conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy against conspiracy theories.
Well, wealth and power. That's the conspiracy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like there's extreme concentrations of wealth and power. And when you see that from the outside, it only makes sense to think, well, they could do whatever they wanted with that.
Exactly.
Because they could. They have
and they
so
do.
Much wealth and so much. Yeah, exactly. So it only makes sense that like that people's flights of fancy kind of can find targets to stick to in that sort of scenario too.
Mm-hmm.
Because like if Bill Gates wanted, like Bill Gates, I guess technically probably could buy like 8 billion microchips to plant into everybody. I mean, I guess if I did that, he might have the money for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's like what he wants to do with his money, but it's just like you see people who's like, well, and I'll listen to them whenever people talk about getting injections.
Mm-hmm. And what does the microchip do anyway?
Right. It's just like, that's what I'm saying is that like, the fact that it's possible and plausible should be the real indictment of the system that we're in right now, but they're not implausible. So, I mean, I can't really front people for having them. Now, mm-hmm. I do think that there are facts and stuff that you can start piecing together inside of conspiracies too. I think there's like cold hard facts about like what we know regarding like the Iran-Contra affair and who knew mm-hmm. what and when. Like that was like the criminal conspiracy.
Yeah.
And it got, you know, and in hindsight only looks worse for people, but of course got, you know, covered up and people thinking they're like, oh, you think the United States really want to sell arms to Iran for this thing? Like, oh, you're crazy. You know what I mean? They think it's always possible in a lot of different ways because of the amount of power and wealth they've given themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another interesting component, too. We got about 5 minutes left on the live show. I don't know if you want to stay a little bit after and we can kind of do a little bit of overtime. I don't know if you've, you know, got...
Hey, man, I'll do a little OT.
But anyway, one of the things that also I find fascinating in this entire conversation is what disqualifies certain conspiracy theories. Like, you brought up Iran-Contra, right? And, like, that was something that was documented, proven, all that so like the Iran-Contra to go all the way back to the 1980s, essentially there was an uprising in the South in South and Central America of essentially armed revolutionaries who are essentially trying to, you know, bring equality and break away from, you know, U.S. hegemony and capitalist hegemony in the South and Central America, right? And there was a counter-revolution of people called Contras. So in part of that, there was funding that the Reagan administration essentially needed money, and they sold arms to Iran against like U.S. trade and U.S. law. They sold money to fund these Contras to kind of push their agenda going forward, and it was totally busted and documented and all these kinds of things, and essentially Reagan just walked away with it because they waved the flag and they were like, you can't really be, the president is above reproach forever and ever, you know? And that's one of the things that really kind of blows me away when it comes to facts, not caring about your feelings, and feelings, more importantly, not caring about your facts, is that like that was a fact dead to rights, and facts did not matter. You know, like Ollie North or whatever got in trouble, but
yeah, but everybody had the feeling that Reagan couldn't have known.
Yeah.
I mean, not Reagan. Yeah. I mean, not our Ronnie. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the opinion of him. Like, then he's like, oh, he's just a sweet, doddering old man at this point. Like, what is he? Yeah. Like, they probably, Oliver North probably took advantage of him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what people will tell themselves anything about this goober. Mm-hmm. This guy, you know. Ronald Reagan, one of the most hateful people ever occupy the White House, anyway.
Busted up unions, the air traffic controllers union, just absolutely changed the trajectory of labor in America
just
downward.
A scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's one of the most malignant forces in U.S. history. And now the Democrats reify him as this like high figure. Like Obama loved Reagan, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Clinton
Reagan. I can't even. The election happening in the background of all this right now, too, is just still so upsetting to me. The fact that there's like at the end of all of this, beautiful, beautiful panic and chaos and nervousness. At the end of the year, we get to pick between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. It's like it's like a big dessert for this for the old 2020.
Yeah.
Is that choice like looming in the background?
Yeah, and coronavirus was the like big like flying elbow from the Macho Man right onto Bernie Sanders' chest, you know?
Dang, that was brutal.
That was so brutal. Like, we can get into that in OT, but real quick before we go, go ahead and talk a little bit about where we can find more information about Sup Last.
Oh yeah, please. You can Sup Last is every Monday through Thursday at 11 o'clock on twitch.tv/CyrusJCooper. You can follow me at Cyrus J Cooper on Twitter also for updates and everything like that. And it would be fun to watch the news with you.
Cool. Yeah, and I can say it's like I enjoy watching the show with Cyrus. It's always super fun. You can also get more information about Good Morning Comrade at goodmorningcomrade.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Comrade Morning, and you can also listen to us every week 8 a.m. WHIV FM 102.3 in New Orleans, and you can also check us out online whivfm.org/listen and whivfm.org/good-morning-comrade. Cyrus, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to do a little bit of OT, so you can check us out on goodmorningcomrade.com if you'd like. Anything you want to say on the way down?
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and can't wait to talk to you again in a couple minutes here.
Absolutely, man.
Just a moment.
My pleasure. All right, love you, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.